On October 25th, the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater will present Ira Glass of This American Life, presenting Seven Things I've Learned. Ira is the creator, producer, and host of This American Life, the iconic weekly public radio program with over 5 million listeners around the world. Using audio clips, music, and video, Ira will deliver a unique talk sharing lessons from his life and career in storytelling, what inspires him to create, what drives his passion, how have failures and successes informed his decisions. Again, it is Ira Glass at the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater on October 25th at 8 p.m., and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ira Glass to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
Good. So nice to be here.
I have seen versions of this presentation that you do. I'm wondering, how did you come upon this way of telling your story before a live audience?
I mean, honestly, the whole idea of this show is I just wanted something that could be a container in which I can put a bunch of stories that would be fun to present to an audience. So it's seven kind of enjoyable stories. And then I thought, what could plausibly be a reason to explain it? And then the other thing that's nice about this format is that I'm constantly can be switching stuff in and out. If something happens, I think, oh, that'd be fun to do in front of an audience. So the thing is constantly changing and evolving and adding in new material and getting rid of other stuff.
But you're mixing it on stage. I mean, you're putting it together on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I do arrive on stage with a plan of what I'm going to say. But yeah, I do the mixing on stage. So basically, the idea is that, yeah, I have the quotes and music. And when there's video, I have video. But mostly, quotes and music. So I can make it sound just like the radio show. I mix it live kind of in front of people as I speak.
So the another way of asking that question is it strikes me that a lot could go wrong.
That's so true. As in any human endeavor, so much can go wrong. But I don't know. That's kind of the fun of it, is to have it there and hit the quotes and mix it live and try stuff and try new stuff and just see what people like.
I mean, do you still have a point? I mean, I've been doing this a long time, but there are those days where I just can't get out of script reading to save my life. Do you still have that?
I have a version of that. We've been doing This American Life since 1995. So we've done, yeah, I don't know, 800 shows, something like that. Sometimes when I have to write the opening of the show where we tell a little story and then it drives to some idea and then I say, here's what we're doing today. There definitely are times where I feel like I have done this so many times. Do you know what I mean? It's really different doing something for the 800th time than doing it for the 10th time. It's really, really different. But I will say it's more like most people's jobs than anything else. Most people, that's their job. And so on a good week, the thing that I'm writing about is a fun one that I'm excited to write about. And on a bad week, it's something that is decent. And then I'm going to have to kind of put lipstick on it and some sparkle on its hair to make it seem good. And that's an interesting challenge too. But it is definitely different doing it now than when I first started.
Jack Parr once told me that there are times he felt like he had said everything he had to say twice.
That is so interesting. I mean, I definitely don't feel that, partly because we're doing a documentary show. So basically I'm just going out and talking to people and having them come in and tell fun stories or interesting stories. So I don't have that problem. But I guess there is a version of that. And there's a certain kind of interview that I've done so many times that I do feel the machinery of it in a way that that definitely, at the beginning of doing this, I never did. On the other hand, I will say I think having done it so many times has advantages. Like I spot what's exciting faster. And I still get as excited about moments in the stories as I ever did. And my speed at getting to what should be on the air is a lot quicker than it used to be.
How do you catalog that in the sense of once you get there and the ingredients are in place that you're able to get to where you want to be? What has gone by the wayside, do you think?
I mean, like there are different, for making stories for the radio, like there are different phases to it, right? Like there's a part where you kind of imagine, oh, here's what I hope is going to happen in the interview. And then like and now I feel like I really do go into the interview really like hopeful about certain things. And then just very quickly after the interview, like in the past, I think when I was starting out, I would think like, I don't know, maybe this or that. But like now I feel very sure about what to make. And then I can be and then I'm faster, honestly, at putting it together just from having done it so many times. And so I mean, it's funny, like now actually working with people who are not as experienced, like some of the staff that I work with are just as experienced as I am and have been doing this for decades. But some of the people are new, and I always have to remind myself, right, like if you haven't done this like hundreds of times, it just takes so much longer. Well, they'll go off and write their stories, and it'll be like, well, they'll take 2 days, and I'll be like, well, isn't that just kind of like a couple of hours? But of course, like that's not a thing I would ever say to them. It's in my head, and it's so unfair because it used to take me 2 days. You know what I mean? Like, and just so that's kind of the upside to it.
To your point, I think, is that when you get excited, when you leave the studio and you're excited and jazzed, then you know that you've really achieved something because after all of those times, it's like, man, that was great.
Yes. Yeah. Like for sure. For sure. But that's always been true. Like from like when I was 18 and first like tried to interview people, like when something happened on tape that I was excited about, it was exciting. And I was like, I couldn't wait to put it on the air. And I absolutely still feel like in a very childish way that I don't know if I can defend or just whatever. Like it's still that part of it still feels exactly the same. If that would ever go away, then I don't think I could do the job. But like that's kind of the fun of it is like you sort of head out into the world and the whole world is like a casino, and you're gonna like strike out, you're gonna strike out, you're gonna strike out. Like it's not gonna work, it's not gonna work. Oh, they tried this and they didn't say this, and you tried to ask them this and they didn't say this. But then you ask them this, and they said a whole thing that you didn't even know could be. You had no idea, and it's so like exciting.
I teach broadcasting classes, and one of the questions that we always talk about with the students is, if an interview goes horribly, whose fault is it?
Oh, that's so interesting.
Is
What's
it
the
the,
answer to that? Wait, what
well,
is the answer?
I don't know what the answer is. I honestly don't. I mean, I'm certainly very capable if an interview goes south that it can be my fault. I didn't do enough research. It was not, I wasn't having a good day. Things were not clicking.
I'll
But
just say for the
man,
radio listeners, I'm shaking my head. Yes, I have that same experience. Yes, to everything you're saying. Yes, keep going.
but there's also those times where I'm doing, I'm going through hoops left and right, and I've done, just research and I know the subject inside and out, and boy, I can't get anything out of them to
Yeah.
save my life.
I mean, my experience is like, since we're having people come on the show, like you, and usually it's just somebody to tell something that happened to them in their life, right?
Right.
And so when I sit down with them to interview them, like I have some inkling. Like sometimes I know a little, but sometimes I know a lot about like what I hope they'll be able to talk about. And my experience of it is that there's a small percentage of people who are just not able to connect to their feelings in a way that they're going to tell it well, ever, no matter what I do. Or
Right.
like no interviewer would ever be able to do it. They're just not, the way they think about what happened is they're at kind of an emotional distance. And so they're never going to be able to tell it in a way where they're connected to it emotionally. And as somebody talking to them, where you're going to be able to feel it. That's a small percentage of people. And then most people, if you're talking to them about something that means something to them, they'll be good talkers. And then there's a
Right.
kind of like 15%, 10% of people who are like the sort of spectacular storyteller talkers. And we all have people like this in our lives who they can take anything that happens to them. And when they talk about it, it's so interesting. Do you know what I mean? And you really hope that the person at the center of your story, if you're doing a radio story, is one of those people, because those people are so entertaining to listen to. But if they're like, and can I say, I am not in that class. I am definitely in the like civilian class of like, if something super meaningful happens to me, I'm good. But otherwise, like, I'm not that good at talking about something. Like, honestly, this comes up with my wife when I get home at the end of the day to explain what happened during the day. Like, I'm not a great storyteller in that context. I really have to like sit down and write it out and think about the plot points to be a good storyteller. And so I think like, And so I feel very clear. Honestly, for me, at the end of an interview, like I do know the ones where I just didn't do a good job, but at this point, that's kind of rare. And generally, I just I, it, what I feel like what I'm seeing is just like certain people are just not going to go there with you, and it's not their fault. It's just kind of the way their personalities work.
Right. And that in of itself tells a story and tells where they're from, of why they're capable or not capable of doing that.
But it's true. But the problem is for a radio story, like if their kind of emotional insensitivity is actually the meaning of the story, if they did something in the story that actually was like terrible or not good to somebody else, the problem is if they're not a good talker, it's really hard to make an interesting story out of it. Like if they're kind of flat in their affect and they're not connected to what they're saying, like you can do a good print story. But as radio, you really need somebody who really is connected to their feelings to talk. And often in doing stories like we do on our show, where we have the luxury of being able to take a week and we're not on every day, like the trick that we'll do is we'll find somebody close to them. And I know this is kind of like feeds into a sexual stereotype, but I will say like often there'll be a man at the heart of a story and he will not describe the events in an emotional way. But if we talk to his wife or girlfriend or partner, often they will be more in touch with their feelings and they will describe what happened to the man. Again, I know we're trading in stereotypes, but usually it is a man. They'll talk about what happened to the man, and like they will be connected, and then you can intercut them, and from the two things, you really do get a feeling for what really happened. But it really is like a thing you have to think about in a radio piece.
Do you, I know we've talked about this before, but do you know what the story is going in, or is it a discovery process still of that you find different aspects that make it perhaps slightly a different story than you had expected, and something that ultimately be even more exciting?
Some stories I know the entire story beginning to end before I sit down for the interview, and some I know nothing. And so an example of the first kind is like often the stories that we have at the top of the show, like I know when I'm sitting down for the interview, I know what the theme of the show is. We spent months putting together the other stories in the show. We just need like a funny, light thing to start the show. And I and other producers will look for weeks to find somebody who could be that kind of story, and we'll pitch things to each other. So at the point where we sit down, I know the story that they're going to tell. And I know the beats of it, and I know how it's going to work in the episode. So that's one extreme. But the other extreme is like sometimes I'm just out in the field reporting. Like we recently did an episode on the West Bank, and we did that because we felt like there were things that had happened in the West Bank, that because of all the attention on Gaza, most Americans, including us, honestly, as like news consumers, like those of us who work in the show, were like, oh, that happened? Like this, like there's been a real crackdown by the Israelis on the Palestinian population in the West Bank, and so. Going around, I would just walk into businesses and just be like, tell me about how life here has changed since October 7th. And there's a thing that we put into the show where I just like walked into a car dealership. You know what I mean? And like they had tons of really interesting things to say about car sales and how they had fallen apart and why they had fallen apart. And they were really funny guys. And so that's the thing where I'm like walking into an interview, I literally know nothing. Like I'm asking them cold and then trying to get a story out of them and trying to get a personal story, like where they talk about their feelings and how they see where they live and just try to get everything you would want in a really good story. And so there's a range.
Ira Glass of This American Life presenting Seven Things I've Learned October 25th at 8 p.m. at the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater. Give me a sense of how you are feeling about public media these days and the environment, and does it have any impact on the day-to-day job that you do?
I mean, are you talking about the funding cuts at the federal level?
Yes.
Are you talking about Republican leaders saying that our work is unfair and biased?
Yes, I would be talking about that, yes.
Okay, on the funding level, like we at our show, we don't get federal money and like so it didn't that didn't affect us directly. And stations, like WAMC, like pay us some money to run our show, but it's not that much money. We make more back in pledge drive, or they make more back in pledge drives during our show than we charge them. So
Right.
we don't think that's going to affect us. And really, most stations, the average station lost 14% of its funding. Do you know what AMC lost?
Five.
Five. So larger stations. And stations that are kind of like strong, like AMC,
Right.
like lost like four or five. That's very typical for like a big station or a strong station. And it's the small rural stations, which serve populations that are so small, like 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 people. Like those are the ones that were getting half their budget from the federal government or more. And those are the ones that will be cut. So anyway, so that none of that is really going to affect our show very much, we think. The branding problem of being called biased and unfair by the president of the United States, I don't know, to say it's a branding problem, it's upsetting. It's upsetting because we do it like a we do a show which is like rigorously fact checked by professional fact checkers, and we know that everything is accurate. Nothing is inaccurate in our show. And we're not, like most shows aren't weekly shows, so they don't have the luxury of having a fact checker re-report the entire show. But we do, and but other people, but other other shows hold to those same standards of like everything has to be accurate. So I think on accuracy, there's no question. Like I do think on story selection, like the voices that you hear on public radio, including on This American Life, like conservatives are right that we could be doing a better job getting conservative voices on the air. I think that that's an entirely fair criticism. But for me, the people who were arguing that all federal funding should be cut because of that, are people who really weren't attentive to what was actually being broadcast. I think the product has been better than what they are saying.
Just given the environment, just given what stations are going through, and just public media. I mean, let's just say institutionally, whether it impacts you or your show directly or not, of how that what kind of mood that puts you in as you're working. I mean, does it set a fire and say, we have to work, we're going to keep going even and even more so, or as we've seen a lot of people that just sort of roll their eyes and say, okay, it's time to look for the door.
I do not want to look for the door. No, I
Yeah.
feel like this moment we're living through is a historic moment of change. And I honestly feel lucky to have a job where I can be reporting on it and documenting it and be talking to people about it and be trying to make sense of it. Like, it's lucky to be able to have a job where I feel like I can be engaging with it. And it feels like a really important and urgent time to be reporting and to be, doing our jobs. So no, like I feel like no, I feel I found this. I mean, maybe this is, I don't know if this is a bad thing to say. I have found this an enormously energizing time to be doing a show on the radio.
It's unfair, probably, for me to mention this, but and I can certainly edit it out if it doesn't work. But it looks like somebody like Ari Shapiro, and Ari's leaving, and Ari says, okay, I went in, I said I was going to do 10 years, I did 10 years, and now I'm gone. And I think to myself, well, I don't know how I'd feel about that. I mean, obviously, it's his decision; he can do whatever he wants. He's got a lot of irons and a lot of fires. That's great. That's fantastic. I wouldn't be able to leave the movie.
But he wasn't leaving because he felt like the times are different or something, or public media is different,
Well,
right?
I don't know. I mean, he said publicly that he wanted that he felt this was a time to go, and that he had said from the beginning that he was interested in doing about 10 years of this. He did it, and now he's moving on.
Right.
And all I'm positing is that, regardless of what I had said 10 years ago, if I, at this
Oh, I
particular
see.
moment of
I
what's
understand.
happening, it would be hard for me to get out of my seat and leave the movie before I see what happens.
Yeah. I'm closer to your position. I feel like this is just enormously, I don't know. Like it's just an enormously interesting time to be a reporter, and to be putting stuff on the radio. And so I mean I have no plans to stop right now. The thing that's hard, the argument against that is that for anybody doing fact-based journalism anywhere, we live now in an age which is different than when I started in public media in the 90s, because I'm very old.
I'm right there
Oh,
with you.
sorry, started in public media, excuse me, in the 70s, because
Yeah.
I'm very old. In the 1970s, that's when I started. This American Life started in the 90s. You know, there was a sense in the 70s and 80s that if you do a story and you present the facts accurately, you could, you'd persuade people of like, oh yeah, that's a thing. That's a way to see something. And now, like, just that doesn't happen. Like, I don't know how much it happened back then either, truthfully, but it really doesn't happen now. Like it doesn't matter what the facts are on any given issue. Like, nobody persuades anybody on either side. And so then, like, at some level, like, what's the point of being a reporter if the facts don't matter? And I think the answer is, I don't know, the facts might not matter to everybody, but they still matter to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a smarter thing to say about it than that. Like, it still seems important to me. Like, I want to know what the facts are. Like, and I'm glad when we figure them out, you know? So yeah, I could see why somebody might quit.
Do you you've mentioned it a couple of times, and I found it interesting because, I mean, you've rightfully made the distinction between your show and other shows where you have a week, you have time, and in some cases you're working a long, long time for months on a certain story, and
Often, yeah.
bringing that together. Day-to-day shows, can they learn anything from This American Life? Can they learn anything from the fact of while we don't have that luxury of having that time, what can we learn, and is it worth thinking about taking more time for stories because they need it?
I'm pausing because I don't know. Like, I've worked on daily news shows. Like, I worked for like 17 or 18 years on daily news shows, and I was a producer on All Things Considered and Morning Edition. And there are just certain things you can do with speed, and there are certain things you can't do. And the things that we do on This American Life, where we can, like, spend weeks, you know, like, getting people to open up and talk to us, and getting and sourcing it out so that we know it's all true, and just, like, you know, like I don't think there are lessons from that part of it for daily journalism. Like, I just think daily journalism is just something else. The one thing that possibly, you know, someone could do in a daily way are the little, like, are just like doing stories that are just small personal stories of people who are inside of the news. I mean, so much of what we do on our show is like we're trying to say, like, okay, we know you've already kind of heard about this big policy change, but now let's, like, go and, like, be with people, like, who are either experiencing what this means or advocating for it or fighting it, and just, like, getting very close to them in a way that you can see it in a way that's way more lived and way more three-dimensional. And the time in that kind of thing is just finding the person. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're halfway a good talker, then you just need to have the time to find them. And again, like, sometimes in a daily show, like, you just don't have that time. But sometimes there's somebody who can, like, do it.
You are coming to the Paramount Hudson, and you. How many of these do you do roughly a year?
I do one a month.
Oh, so that sounds like a good number.
It's a good number. It's 12. I've done one a month since the radio show started.
Yeah, and it's nice to get out, I assume, and to see the people that are listening to the show.
It's really fun. It's so much more fun to be on a stage talking to people than to be in a radio studio talking to people. It's so much more fun to, like, have people right there and feel the presence of them.
Ira Glass will be at the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater October 25th at 8 p.m. You can find out more by going to ParamountHudsonValley.com. ParamountHudsonValley.com. Ira Glass, you are terrific, an inspiration. I thank you so much for spending time with us, and have a great time when you come visit the Hudson Valley.
Thank you so much. I feel like this is the kind of interview where sometimes the questions were better than the answers, and I salute you for that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Be well. Take
Yeah,
care of
you too.
yourself.
Yeah,
Good to see
thanks.
you.
Likewise.
Again, Ira Glass of This American Life presents Seven Things I've Learned, October 25th at 8 p.m. at the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater. You can find out more information by going to ParamountHudsonValley.com. ParamountHudsonValley.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.